Bullblood.com. Bullblood.com.
This week on the Boag World Web Design Podcast, we're going to look at ScreenFlow, Starkers, bizarrely, MailChimp, don't snigger, and PhotoSync. So,
woohoo!
That's my new attempt to start the show differently.
I don't think you've done the traditional start on any one of this series.
No, I'm determined, never again. Okay. And we talk about the fact that I haven't done the traditional start every show, so that is becoming a tradition in itself, so we need to stop it.
Yeah, we'll stop.
So there's Marcus here, and also joining us is Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Come along just to make a general nuisance of myself and poke my nose in, as always.
Yes. Is this your first time?
No.
This is my second time.
Right.
I was here shortly after I started Headscape, I joined you.
Okay.
So the great thing about Dan is that he brings a unique, grumpy perspective.
I do.
For someone so young,
he knows
what
he's talking about, which kind of makes a...
What are you implying?
That you don't, and I don't.
Well, put it like this. Dan this morning fixed... My Apache installation,
fixed.
Which was working perfectly fine until he got his hands on it.
No comment.
Can't deny it, can you? So here we are again.
Yes, Dan, you've been away, haven't you?
I have. I've just come back from WDC, which was lovely. It was brilliant to catch up with some people and saw some absolutely fantastic talks.
So where's WDC? Well, I know where it is. It was a leading question.
Up in Bristol. It's held at the Odeon.
Is it up?
In Bristol.
Yeah, I think Bristol's more down.
Bristol's
really?
Up to me. Anything north of the M4 is the north to me, so Bristol's definitely up. Actually, I'm from way down south.
The whole of the UK is north to you, pretty much, isn't it?
Pretty much,
maybe
yeah.
South Devon and Cornwall, they would be down, and that's about
it. They would be south, yeah. Yeah.
So, Bristol, and it's just a day's conference, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a one-day conference. It's absolutely brilliant. I think it's about £50.
I know, it's good value. It's really good value.
Excellent value, and it's up-and-coming speakers as well, so it's sort of people that you don't generally get to see.
The old boring...
You've spoken a couple of times, but normally it's pretty good.
I sort of knew that was coming.
It was excellent this year. Paul wasn't there.
Yeah. So that's because I was at Future Web Apps.
Oh, how did that go? I know I've been to FOA before.
No, you haven't. You've been to FODA.
You sure?
I don't think you've been to the apps one.
I've never actually sat in on any of the talks or these things. I just kind of mill around and interview people.
I've never been to FOA.
I got the chance to go to one of each, I think. I was on placement at Carsonify for a week, and I managed to tag along and help out. At FOAD 2010, I think. Tagged along to FOA 2010 as well. I think was your... Was that when you were doing a workshop?
Probably.
Possibly. I think I sat at the back and heckled you.
How did you?
Cool.
I would have noted you.
Yeah,
you
I've been to FOAD many times.
I was one of the little people then.
So,
cheers.
FOA.
FOA.
Any good?
Well, I realised certain things at FOA. One is that...
You're middle-aged.
Developers are clever. And I'm not.
But you sat in and thought, what the hell am I doing here?
I tried to sit in and then realised I was really wasting my time. I didn't understand any of it. It all sounded very clever to me and very complicated. So I did that. I realised that. The other thing I realised is that... I get one consistent type of feedback every time I speak, which is people come up to me and said, that was an amazingly entertaining presentation. They never come up to me and said, I learned loads of things from that. That was an inspiring presentation or an intelligent presentation or anything else. The only word I ever get is entertaining. I know, I'm doomed. Basically, I am just the comedy value. I am the comic of the web design community. And what is particularly sad about that is I'm the comic of the web design community. So it's not a particularly high standard. It's like I'm the accountant with the best personality. You know, it's not a particularly high standard to reach. So, no.
What did you talk about, Paul?
I talked about marketing.
That's why no one's interested.
Well, I was in the small room as well, which dented my pride, my overexpanded ego.
Developers really not interested in marketing.
Actually, it was quite good.
I'm not saying it wasn't good.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant the reaction I got from people. It was, I think a lot of developers are realising that they're having to market themselves, personally. But also, these are the guys that are out there producing all these apps, either as, you know, side projects or whatever, and they're having to learn to market. I mean, I got chatting with Simon Wilson from Lanyard.
Willison.
Well, not Wilson. Willison, thank you. And, I mean, he's now a salesman, basically. He's selling, you know, Lanyard and all the stuff that they're offering and all the rest of it. And, you know, he's having to wrap his head around this. He comes from a development background. So yeah, absolutely.
I gave lots of advice early on about things like that.
Did you?
Yes.
They're certainly...
They didn't come back and say cheers or anything, so I assume they thought it was complete rubbish.
I think it's taken them a while to realise... Well, no. I mean, to begin with, it was all about building the product. So yeah. I think only recently have they kind of got to the point of going, oh, shit, we have to actually sell this thing. Mm. And, you know, Simon, he was very honest and open. And so I got a lot of that, you know, of people that are going, yeah, okay, I do need to market and think about things like that as well. And then I did an all-day workshop on the subject as well. I hate all-day workshops. Can I just say that? I have to work for a living that day. It's horrendous.
Yeah, and all day, yes, it is. It's, well, I've done a couple with you. I just get bored.
Well, it's because you don't really
working
do
nine
them.
To five. I know. Of it. An no, entire day.
I know. I
can't even imagine that.
It's horrendous. So anyway, that's what I've been doing.
Okay.
And I'm going to San Francisco next week.
Jet setter.
What can I say? Going to go and hook up with Leo Laporte and pretend I'm a proper podcaster. And I'm trying to wangle a tour around Twitter.
Yeah, that would be cool. Do you know anyone in Twitter?
No, I'm just going to turn up. Give me the tour. Yeah, I do.
Do you know who I am?
No, I know a couple of people. So I'm going to see if I can wangle a little look around. Because apparently they've got a new swanky office. And I want to have a look.
Yeah.
To know how the other half lives.
Does Twitter make any money these days?
I don't know. They've become very Nazi-like in a lot of ways recently.
Twitter's just the service for people who don't have $50.
Yes. I know. I'm not paying. That annoyed me, that. Have we talked about this before on the show?
Are you not on app.net? I assumed you'd be on app.net.
No, I've refused.
Because you like new things.
I do like new things. But it's like everybody I know is on Twitter, and why would I want to be on app.net and pay money for the privilege? Basically, they're charging $50 for you to secure your username on the presumption that one day they might turn into something.
Well, it is a lot deeper than that. It's $50 for you sort of being a part of a service and having a say in a service as opposed to being the product.
I mean, but I can see more and more it does make sense. If we actually said what we're talking about, app.net. Yeah, yes,
we have
you did.
Briefly covered this in the past, but not probably. Carry on, chaps, because I'm quite interested in this.
So essentially, app.net is a Twitter clone, right? So it's exactly the same as Twitter, pretty much. The difference being is that they charge you for it. So their logic is that means they won't do bad things.
How much do they charge?
It was originally $50. I think it's dropped to something like $35 now. I think it's still, for a developer license for access to the API, I think it's still $100. It's per year. So just access to it, I think
$35 a year for Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Madness. It's not a lot.
It's not
madness.
Oh, actually, no, it's monthly membership of $5, $36 a year. Yeah, you're right, $100 a year for developer license.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. It is madness. Their logic is essentially that...
They won't do bad things.
It's the fact that with Facebook and Twitter, you're the product and...
They're selling your data, they're using advertising. And got to say, I mean, Twitter have done some fairly interesting things recently. For example, they've put caps on third party. You know, these third party apps made their service, and suddenly now they're capping the usage of, you know, how many users you're allowed to have, and they're changing the ground on you the whole time. I mean, another example is that they had an API which was called Anywhere, right? Which Boag World has used quite a lot of functionality from that, and that's now being sunsetted and retired, and they've got a new thing where essentially the only difference for the new thing is that they're controlling their brand more, and they're, you know, they'll be able to pump advertising and stuff into it. So they're really rejigging quite heavily to push their advertising. And the logic of app.net is we won't have to do that because we charge you for it.
Yeah, no ads.
Yeah. Essentially. I know, that's the kind of my reaction.
It or leave it.
It just feels, I can understand it and it makes sense, but I just keep going, well, basically, all of my followers on Twitter, everything I've built up is on Twitter. I can't be asked for another network,
really. If it was quite a lot cheaper than that, then I think it wouldn't. If it was like, I don't even notice it.
$36 a year is not a lot. It's $3 a month. It's like £2 a month.
Yeah, for something. I mean, I use Twitter probably once every 3 days. I mean, it's...
I guess it comes down to how much you use it.
Yeah. But also, it depends on who follows you and who else uses it. That's really important.
True.
I think, yeah. I mean, it also depends on why you use a network like that. For example, for me... there's kind of two sides to my Twittering. This is a massive tangent, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's quite an interesting one.
It's about an app.
Yeah. There's two sides to my Twittering. One is my kind of personal gumph, right? You know, me chatting with Dan or with you or whatever else. And I could see app.net being of use to that because it will be a smaller community of people that really want to be there. Mm. And I can see it from a kind of social interaction point of view. But the other side of my Twittering is as a marketing tool, right? And I know the vast majority of my followers aren't going to pay $36 a year to use a service like that. Which I guess is part of the reason, you know, part of the thing about app.net is they don't want marketers on it. So I guess in that regards, it's right, but it's not right for me personally.
No, I haven't. I haven't even reserved username or anything like that. I'd happily pay for Twitter and Facebook. I mean, the way I use Twitter and Facebook, I have sort of my personal people that I know in person and friends from school on Facebook. And I would use Twitter for my Facebook more tech side of things. But I mean, I'd use Twitter for sort of mates in the industry. If anyone, like most of the people on my Facebook, I would probably bore the crap out of if they actually followed me on Twitter.
Yeah.
So that's, I keep a fairly sort of separate thing there. But I'd happily pay for Facebook or Twitter.
Would pay for Facebook, which is bizarre because if you'd said that to me 2 months ago, I would have said I wouldn't. But I've
especially if I could
using
have some...
it a lot more,
right?
And I've gone through. I used to have, I don't know, 200 friends on it, and I just thought I'm going to go through. It's only people who I, you know, go to the pub with, effectively, and it's suddenly become this fantastic thing.
Yeah,
because I was bothered to sort it out. I keep up with the feed, and it's just silliness, but it's great. It's nice, not full of people that I don't really know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's turned into a really good tool that I like.
I think I'd be even more willing to pay for Facebook if they actually sought out the developer tools for Facebook, if integrating Facebook with sites was nicer, because their API is one of the most horrible things to work with in the world.
It isn't very nice. Which I have to say, the new Twitter one, although I've got problems with it, is really simple to use.
As long as they don't change it. I think that's the main problem I have with Facebook, because it seems like every time I go back to it, they've changed it.
Well, we've had that problem with them changing their rules.
Yes,
with clients.
Yeah,
about we've made recommendations for using commenting and things like that,
and then
they've doesn't work.
Changed it online.
It's suddenly changed it.
Okay,
see, there's things like that. I mean, that's what's annoying me about Twitter with this kind of getting rid of. Anywhere. I probably ought to be careful saying all this because I want...
They won't let
me in.
This all came by the from time you saying you're going to try and get...
By the time this comes out, it'll be too late.
Yeah.
So that's all right.
You're already got
Twitter,
in.
Evil you're grin. A bunch of... No. Twitter has been brilliant. I'm going to wear my... If I go on the tour, I'm going to wear my original... I'm wearing my Twitter t-shirt, which was the first t-shirts that they gave out. When I met them at South by Southwest, before they were all famous, had a little chat with Biz.
I haven't got any Twitter t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I've only got an I tweeted at Stephen Fry, and all I got was this luxurious t-shirt.
You paid money for that, didn't you?
I did pay money for that.
It's See, this is why he's willing to pay money for app.net.
Because I'm willing to pay money for silly, witty t-shirts.
Yes, absolutely. Right, should we move on to what we're actually going to talk about on the show? Right, okay, so our first up is a designer tool, and it is a tool called ScreenFlow for the Mac. This is a Mac-only tool. I've been quite careful not to do too many Mac-only tools.
But there are other equivalents.
Camtasia.
Is a very
But Camtasia look like costs three times the price.
Does it?
I don't know, it used to. Camtasia. I never spell Camtasia either, that's the other
thing. C-A-M-T-A-S-I-A.
Yes, I can really, I was joking.
ScreenFlow is not cheap though.
Oh, link to the show notes for Camtasia.
Okay.
No, ScreenFlow is like $79.
Yeah, but it's not dollars. It's not 69p, is it?
Oh no, but you don't expect that from a Mac app.
$199.
Although why you should expect it from a thingamabob either is.
I hate the fact that no one has value in applications anymore. This is a whole other subject.
It's not. And here comes the grumpy old man.
We did actually cover this briefly with Lee the other week.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Although I think that's going to change.
Hmm.
I think it's going to go. We're in that place at the moment where everyone expects everything for nothing. Well, it's been like that for a decade.
I hope there is, because the amount of effort that goes into a 59p app that just doesn't get, and people sit there just going, oh, but it's 60p.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't spend that. It's just preposterous.
Well,
anyway.
Yeah, ScreenFlow is £63 mm-hmm. and 88 pence. Camtasia is £238.
Aimed more at the corporate market, I suspect.
Yes, absolutely. Although I have to say, from a user experience point of view, I prefer ScreenFlow. So we haven't even said what they are yet. See, this is what happens. You jump in and make presumptions.
They're screen recording tools.
There we go. So there we go. You can screen recording and so much more, apparently. But
really?
Apparently, yes. I mean, right, let's talk about ScreenFlows. That's the one that we're actually discussing. I mean, it is a bit more than screen recording, because you can record yourself.
It's true.
You can show
you
a little
picture. Put the little box in the corner.
Well, it doesn't have to be a little box. It could be a big box. Okay. I've got to do this tomorrow, haven't I?
Yes, you
For
have.
You.
Yes, it's got to be the best video you've ever made. No pressure.
No pressure at all. So essentially you can record your screen, you can pan it, you can zoom it, you can do effects to it, you can crop and resize, scale video, you can edit bits of different takes together, you can overlay an audio track, you can record your webcam or any other source that you may wish to mention. And it's a really great way of quickly and easily creating what I think look like very professional kind of screen recording stuff.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's easy to use. That's the main thing.
It's deadly to use. And it's also got a lot of the kind of...
5, 4, 3...
What?
2, 1. That's what it does. And then you start recording.
Oh, I see. What the hell he was doing there?
Proving that I've actually used it.
Right.
Which is unlike most of the...
It is. This is true. So it's got some really good transitions and stuff like that. It makes use of Max Core Animation and Core Image stuff, which means it's really... smoothly done. It's a great app. I don't think there's a huge amount to say about it. It's just that more and more as I look at websites these days, they have these screen recordings on them. You know, not just... You see, we're not even just talking about, you know, oh, I want to show off an application and record a thing about it. You know, it could equally be... I use them all the time for presentations. So I'll record a presentation or a webinar or whatever you're supposed to call them these days. You can export straight, obviously, to your desktop or to YouTube or Vimeo. So I export them to my desktop and then up to Vizar, link in the show notes, which is a video hosting service that I use. But, yeah, it's great. It's great for recording, great for editing, great for sharing. Deadly simple. Don't know what else to say about it. Well, I think that was a pretty... pathetic design section, really. Here's an app. Go check it out.
I really and it's not really a design at all either. It's an anyone who ever wants to record their screen tool, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I suppose it's a designer. So we've ripped off the designers this week.
Yeah, they must be feeling a bit hard done by.
Let's. What other designer tools are there we can talk about? We talked about Coda. You want to talk about Coda, don't you?
I don't mind. I do love Coda. I love all of Panic software.
Oh, there's a sweeping statement. Why do you love all of Panic
software? We covered
Coda
2 weeks ago. Chaps.
Nice. It's reasonably bright. I'm going to sound like I'm working for Panic now.
I'm just interested in, no, I'm not going to let him go off on one too long. I just want to know why he likes all the Panic stuff. So Panic produce Coda, Transmit, Unison? What the hell's that?
Best I say I like all browser. Of the software. I like Coda and Transmit.
Coda and Prompt.
Diet Coda you used for a little while on your iPad, didn't you?
I've still got it on my iPad. It's really quite... It? I have to say... Well, no.
No.
Quite simply, no.
It's an interesting one. Link into the show notes to Diet Coda. And indeed to Panic as well.
And Transmit.
Panic will cover Transmit.
You sure?
Yeah. Look, yeah.
That's the only one I use.
It's really interesting, Diet Coda. It is a brilliant implementation mm-hmm. of an HTML and CSS editor mm-hmm. for the iPad. Mm-hmm. They could not do it better.
Yeah.
Right? And it is a coding environment I would use, but it has... two drawbacks. Drawback one, why the hell would you want to code really on the iPad particularly anyway?
Yeah.
That's a debatable one because I know some people have kind of moved to using the iPad as their primary machine in a lot of cases. When I go off to conferences or whatever, so having something like Diet Code is great. Mm-hmm. The other problem I've got with it, and that this is the fundamental one, no local copy, right? You're only editing a live site.
It doesn't use local storage on
nope.
the iPad at all.
No.
Interesting.
So on that basis, that really limits it. That it kind of reduces it down to, something's gone wrong with the website. I'm out and about. I need to fix it quickly.
And for that, it's excellent. But for that, I can do on my jailbroken iPhone over command line.
Yes, you could, but that's you.
We have that.
That's me.
On recorded now.
We have that jailbroken.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not illegal.
Is it you
still running something ridiculous like iOS 5.0.1? There's just a couple of things. There's a couple of little tweaks I still quite like on it.
What are your couple of little tweaks? Now, this is a tangent on a tangent.
This is on a tangent on a tangent. See, this is why you should never invite me onto the podcast. Okay. I keep going off on one. Scrobbling, because I'm a mad Last.fm fan, and command line and file access, and just general little, tiny little tweaks like, yeah,
that doesn't sound like
it's
a good
fine.
Reason.
Jailbreakers, we know what's good, and anyone else will.
Yeah, but you can't explain you. It.
I can. All right. Okay. Well. All right. If I'm looking for my car keys in a dark room, I can double tap my lock button and have the flashlight come on rather than having to unlock it. I've got lock screen, so I can read my email on the lock screen and I can instantly delete it. You'll hate that, because we have completely different opinions on email. You'll only check it once every week.
Yeah.
And I'll just go, oh, there's an email, don't need to read that, delete, gone, and it's done, it's dealt with.
Okay.
Or I can flag it and follow it up on my lock screen.
Panic, because they've got a good tagline. There you go.
What's their tagline?
Shockingly good software.
Well, it doesn't say that on mine. We make super nice apps. Ooh, do you get a different one every time you hit refresh?
You're going to sit here refreshing the page now, aren't you?
No. This is like that. No, it doesn't say that. He just
look
makes
at the
it
top
up.
of your browser window. Panic.
Oh, shockingly good software. Now we're back to the original tangent now.
Yeah. What are we actually supposed to be reviewing in this section of
the, oh yeah, this is the developer section, isn't it? Shit, we've moved on.
It's tangentception.
Right. Okay. No, this is I don't know whether this is a developer. The line between developer and designer, I don't get it anymore. So, I am recoding Boag World from the ground up, right? I've had this problem
mm-hmm.
where, although we did a season a couple of seasons ago, didn't we, about where I rebuilt Boag World. But what I did when I did that rebuild is I just changed the theme on WordPress, right? Mm. And I basically edited the theme to make it look new. But this website now has been running since 2005. Admittedly not the whole time on WordPress, but a vast majority of that. And it's been layers of shit on layers of shit, you know? and every now and again, you need to wipe things down and you need to start from scratch. So that's what I'm doing this time around. Complete new reinstall of WordPress, bring everything in, etc., etc. Part of that is I've got to recode the template, and I want to have... I want to know about every line that's in there. I want to understand everything this time. So no more kind of, you know, oh, here's a theme I'm just going to tweak and edit and change. I really want to go back and understand stuff. That said, I don't want to kind of open up a blank document and have nothing to refer to and no starting point. So I need something to refer to. So I was looking around for a bare bones theme for WordPress. Have you ever done this? How do you start when you do a WordPress build?
I start completely from ground up.
Really?
Yeah.
Nothing at all?
Nothing at all. But
wow.
I do that with everything, though. I don't. I hate frameworks.
Yes.
I'm an anti-framework.
I know. We've had this conversation many times before. So that's quite interesting. You even do that with WordPress. You really do know every single line that goes into your code.
Yeah.
That's cool. No, that's good. I'm totally there. So I was trying to... I'm kind of almost there, but my knowledge of WordPress isn't good enough, I don't think, to be able to do that.
The fantastic thing about WordPress, though, is any CMS can be great if the documentation's great. And
WordPress
documentation is absolutely the best thing. Really is. It's just stellar.
Yeah, it really, you know, I do know that, and I could do it that way. But even though sometimes knowing what to search on, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is that.
You know, I think if you kind of know what to search on, the documentation's fine. But if you're like... So I mean, something to start with, but I wanted it to be as minimalistic as possible. And I probably won't even use that. I won't overtype it. I just want it there as a reference of, ooh, that's how you do a loop, or that's how you do this, or whatever.
Definitely.
So, but I needed something so, so clean. So I went through all these different options, and there's one out there called Bones, and there's, which a lot of people like, link in the show notes. But even that, it had like CSS and it had other stuff in, and PHP that had things in its function.php, and I just didn't understand it all. So I was searching, and eventually came across this thing called Starkers, right?
Okay.
Which is a great name. Yeah. What a brilliant name. And I was looking through it, and, you know, it really looked like what I wanted. It's on GitHub, so you can go in and actually look at all the files without downloading them. And I really did understand everything that was written there. It all kind of made sense to me, and I thought this is a great starting point. I then noticed it was by Elliot J. Stocks and Keir Whittaker. Which is really weird. I didn't know that they produced it. I didn't know anything about it. I just kind of stumbled across it. And Elliot and Keir are great guys that I've got huge respect for. You must know them as well, I'm guessing.
I bumped into Keir at WDC and we said we'd catch up, and I couldn't find him earlier.
I couldn't find him later.
He ran
away. That's often the way it goes. So this is something that these guys have done, and it is really great job. And what they originally, when they produced this, it was a real stripped down version of the default theme that came with WordPress. But now they've completely recoded it from scratch. So it's all HTML5 and it's just really well done. I mean, whether I use their actual code, I very, very much doubt, but it's so clean that you can easily look through it and go, okay, so that's how you do a loop.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this is how you add an extract or whatever else. So absolutely highly recommend it. Check it out. If you're kind of new to WordPress, I think this is a really, really good starting point to get going, because it's just so incredibly clean. It's just brilliant. Can't say enough nice things about it. Okay, so we're now talking about something for website owners.
Oh.
What do you mean, oh?
I can pay attention now.
Right, you think this might be for you?
I might understand it.
You might understand it.
Yeah.
You understand Starkers? Well, I explained it very simply. I'll never use it,
that's all.
No, you won't use it. So the what we want to talk about for website owners today is something we already use, although you probably don't. it's called MailChimp.
I don't, but I know what it is.
Most people know what MailChimp is, but have you actually used it, and have you discovered quite how cool it is? MailChimp, for those of you that don't know, is for sending out emails, as you might gather by the name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant for emails, newsletters, and stuff like that. We use it at the moment. I actually think we use it in a really shit way at the moment, and I'm going to sort that out over the next year. So one of the things on my agenda for next year... is to relaunch Boeing.
World domination.
Yeah. After I've done that.
Sex change.
Then. Yeah. And, and various other things in my perverted bucket list. not that I'm implying world domination or sex changes are perverted. That's a separate list I have.
Okay.
Oh, God, can I lie down yet? Yes, MailChimp. So we're using, the way we're using MailChimp at the moment is I wanted to make newsletters easy, right, sending out newsletters. So it just basically, I use it for RSS, So it basically sucks in an RSS feed and sends out newsletters.
Yeah.
But I decided that's a bit shit. So I'm going to start writing email newsletters every week.
That is better, because currently we have the full transcript of every podcast going out.
I know. I've noticed that.
Far too big.
It is far too big.
Huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are other ways around that. But I think writing something personal would be so much better. And I think it's a much better way of connecting with people.
Mm. Yeah.
But this will still be used to manage, because it doesn't just do RSS. That's one of the kind of side features it does. It manages your mailing list and, you know, allows you to send emails out, and it helps you. It's got loads of resources. Again, going back to what we were saying earlier about templates, they've got loads of email templates that you can just tweak and improve for you, because creating nice email HTML templates is the devil's work.
I don't know what you're on about. Everyone loves HTML email templates. Oh.
Have you had to do
I don't know one developer that doesn't absolutely love that job.
Have you had to do that with us? Have we made you do that? I don't think we have.
I've had to tweak a couple. I don't think I've had to create any yet. Oh, I had to do a couple of Magento ones, but I think I actually nicked a couple of templates off of MailChimp.
Right.
Because they've got some lovely templates, yeah.
It's just a horrible, horrible job.
It's basically table-based design, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, kind of. With some CSS. Some CSS works. It's just hacked to the extreme. Horrible, horrible experience. So they've got a load of templates you can use. You can put in your own logos, do your own stuff. It manages your email lists. But you can also do things like I do on Boag World at the moment, and I will continue to do on the new site, which is they give you a form that you can add into your site so people can automatically sign up. They deal with all of the subscribing and unsubscribing stuff. They really work very hard in order to maintain their good rating with spam filters and stuff like that. So they can be what feels like a little bit overly harsh in terms of that if too many people unsubscribe, then they start threatening you and, you know, saying they're going to send the boys around and stuff like that, which can be problematic if, like me, when I first started using it, I had a big mailing list of people that had signed up, but it had been a while since I'd sent them an email. So I moved across to MailChimp, and I got this massive unsubscribe at the beginning because people didn't, you know, no longer wanted my emails. Mm. And so I got MailChimp going, "Ooh, you're naughty." Mm. But that settled down fairly quickly. And they were excellent customer service as well, because they actually, you know, they wrote to me. It wasn't just an automated email that said, you know, "You have broken so-and-so a guideline." You know, you could actually interact with them, and they could give, you know, they would give you advice and support and that kind of stuff. So it's really good. The other thing that I really like about MailChimp is I think it's a really good example of the importance of design.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautifully designed website. But I think what's kind of most impressive about it is, you know, I actually used them as an example in the talk that I gave at Future Web Apps, because, you know, I said to the audience, right, if you could name me one mail provider, you know, that does this kind of stuff.
They all said Dialer.
Yeah, it was a bit of a gamble. But fortunately, they all did say MailChimp. And there are some other really good services out there. There's one, his name I've forgotten now. That's very sad. Campaign Monitor.
Yes.
Is another really well-known one. But you always remember MailChimp because it's got personality, it's got character, it's got this great stuff. So you've got this logo done, character, a MailChimp designed by John Hicks that's beautiful. But you're also in their user interface, you've got some really cool stuff as well, like when you have the preview window. Have you ever used this?
I'm not sure I have.
Oh, it's great. You'd absolutely love it. So you have this preview window where it shows you your email.
Mm.
And of course, one of the big problems with email clients is the width, isn't it? You go to, so it's got this window, and you can drag it out to different widths and see it. Mm. And along the top of it, it's got a ruler that shows you how many pixels, you know, it's been dragged out. And then above it, it's got the little mail chimp icon or character with his arm pointing down the ruler. And as you pull it out, his arm gets longer and longer and longer, and then eventually pops off. And blood spurts.
Yes. No, I have seen that.
And they also have this great great thing in the top bar of it, where it says, it sends you little, the mail, the chimps gives you little messages. So he says things like, I really need to improve my sense of balance. And there's a link and you click on it and it goes to a YouTube, oh, really funny YouTube video. It's got lots of them randomly, but one that really got me of this chimp sitting on a branch. And he's picking his ass with his finger, right? Really attractive kind of chimp thing. And he takes his finger out, looks at it, smells it, and then falls off the branch. It's the funniest thing ever. So they got loads of little things like that, which add real character into it. Really good design, and it makes you want to use their product rather than the competitions. It's just brilliant. Mm. Absolutely brilliant. So check out MailChimp if you want to send out emails, which you should be doing. A lot of us web designers tend to poo-poo email as a kind of, oh, we don't want more spam and all the rest of it. But actually, email is a really good and powerful part of your digital strategy, and you should be using email. MailChimp is the one to check out. The other thing that I love about MailChimp is that you can do condition-based emailing. So, for example, on the anniversary of someone being signed up, or on their birthday, or whatever other criteria that you meet, you can pick, it will automatically send them an email. So that,
so you can categorise people in your list.
Oh, absolutely.
And send it all to the nice people.
Yes, or the nasty people, yeah. Or, you know, be great for Santa. Mm. Or, you know, those that are good boys and those that are bad boys, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And it'll also do, it's really good for, have you ever signed up for one of these kind of email courses where you get one email a week kind of thing?
I haven't.
Well, occasionally they do that kind of thing. It's really good at managing that, so you can say, you know, send a user the second one or the third one a week later, etc. So it can do some really very sophisticated stuff. But it's cheap, it's free to sign up, and free to send emails under a certain number.
2,000 subscribers.
Yeah. So we've just tipped over above that in our email subscription, so we have to pay now. But for a long time, we used it for free. Mm. And once you get up to 2,000 subscribers, you don't really mind paying a bit. And it's really not very much. How much is the pricing? You've got it in front of you.
No, I only noticed that bit.
So it's free forever up to 2,000 subscribers or 12,000 emails. Your monthly plans start at $10 a month and goes up to $240 per month, you know, if you want, like, 25,000 plus subscribers or whatever.
Right, look at that.
So we don't pay that kind of number. So yeah, but tell a lie, it's got high volume as well, where you could be paying $12,000 per month if you have 3 million subscribers.
Wow.
But they've also got a pay-as-you-go scheme as well, so you can pay per email as well, but I'm imagining that gets very expensive if you've got 3 million subscribers. So lots of different options, ways to go. Check it out. Oh, it's got transactional. It's transactional. Transactional emails. One-to-one trigger emails from apps. Don't understand that. But the really good thing about MailChimp is they've got tons of really useful resources as well. So you've got loads of white paper guides on MailChimp doing mobile based email, or, you know, an email marketing field guide, or how to manage your lists. And look, they've just got tons and tons of really good material. MailChimp for bloggers. All kinds of really good resources as well to check out. And that's not even counting their kind of, you know, HTML library templates they've got. They've done a load of research. So they've got research material on here as well. Videos. They've got expert advice. Tons of great stuff. If you've got to do anything with email, you really ought to check out MailChimp.com. So we come finally to our random mobile app section of the show.
What is it this week, Paul?
Well, I was wondering what Dan's favourite mobile app at the moment is. What do you use a lot?
Do you know what? I haven't actually installed any new apps in quite a while. Not Apple Maps. I'm still on iOS 5, so I still get Google Maps for at least a little while.
Apple Maps are okay based on my experience.
Well, I use Copilot in the car, which is excellent.
Mm. I'm sorry, Apple Maps is shit.
Well, I've only used it 3 or 4 times, and it's been fine.
I think there was a rush to get it out, though. It's, mm. it's, For what it is, for the fact that you're trying to map an entire globe, I think we have quite high expectations. I think for what it is, it's going to get there, and when it does, it's going to be fantastic.
I recognize
it's a good start.
Our high expectations have come from the fact of what Apple gave us previously. If they hadn't given something and then taken it away, there wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah.
Or even if they'd said, okay, we're not going to install a map app. Oh, we're going to install the Apple app by default, but the Google one is still going to be on the App Store, and you can delete the Apple one if you don't want it.
Yeah.
I wish you could delete things like stock apps and stuff like that, but that's a whole nother rant.
Jailbreak.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. there's the first good reason you've given me to jailbreak.
No, just put them all on some screen miles away.
Yeah, I know, but it's not tidy. That upsets my
OCD.
You're
more autistic than me.
Yeah, I am considerably more autistic. So that annoys me. No, where it fails in me, I can forgive. Well, no, I know in some cases it's missing whole streets and it's putting cities in the wrong place and shit like that.
I've been on a couple of kind of away days, long weekends, that kind of thing, and I was in Lyme Regis, and I was like, where's that restaurant we want to go to? And it was like, sort of, it's up around the corner there, from where I was in the car park, and it's this little tiny village, really, little town on the south coast of England, absolutely bang on. You're standing here, this is where you need to go.
See, it's the points of interest that are what pisses me off. I can forgive everything else, but, you know, in Blandford, for example, you search on Google for Indian restaurants, it will find all three or four Indian restaurants. Mm. You search on Apple Maps and you get one.
I think that's down to the categorization. If you actually search for, if you know, like, the name of the actual places, it will pick them up. I don't think they're categorized into groupings of Indian restaurants.
And that
places.
Is the problem, because that's how you search.
Yeah, true.
So, mine's
not been. Mine's been just to find my way around places, and it's been fine. But yeah,
I mean, there are other things that are great about it. I love the fact it's vector based, which means that it's much faster than Google Maps, and it downloads less data. So, I mean, that's great. I'm not just knocking it because everybody else is knocking it. I'm knocking it really for points of interest for me. Okay. Oh, and also, flyover. I mean, absolutely pointless feature.
I love that.
I haven't seen that.
That's the one.
Flyover? What is it? Show me.
Have you got a 4 or 4S? I think it's only available on the 5. Because I was playing with it on Tom's 5.
It really...
You just pan and tilt and just go... I was just running
but
around
Southampton. But compared to Street View is really useful. If I'm going to a conference, or take, for example, he says name dropping, when I'm going to go and see Leo Laporte, first thing he did is send me a Street View, so I 3D. Knew what his place looked like.
Okay.
But it'll only work... No, it's like 3D is a different thing to flyover.
Oh.
Because 3D just tilts the map at an angle. Flyover is where you get the buildings...
you actually get the relief in the maps.
But that doesn't help you to navigate in any way, shape or form.
No, but it does look pretty.
It's just eye candy.
Street View is useful. Street View is genuinely useful if you're going somewhere that you've never been before.
It's massively useful. Yeah. So anyway, you didn't answer the question. You haven't installed any apps for ages.
I haven't installed any new apps for ages.
So what do you use most?
Stuff that I've used since I had my first gen iPhone, I think. Things like Shazam.
Right.
Twitter, Facebook.
Shazam! See, there's an app that I use once in a blue moon.
Oh, no, Shazam I use all the time because I love my music and I watch a shocking amount of television. And a lot of the music that I come from comes from TV. So I can sort of find immediately tracks from that. And just when I'm out and about. I think it's because discovery of music, because I use a lot of on-demand services.
Right.
I don't listen to a lot of radio. So my discovery of music, that really helps with that.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I've got a Netflix app because I love Netflix. Shazam I've had for ages. Remote for Apple TV.
Don't have that many apps.
I don't know.
That is amazingly empty. You've only got, what is it, 2 screens worth?
I've got 2 screens, but they're all in folders.
Yeah, but even so, I have, like, 2 screens, then plus, like, 2 screens of folders all full up.
How many of them do you actually access?
Oh, only about 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've got loads of folders as well, and stuff that's been in there.
So what do you use all the time? What are your common apps?
Well, apart from, obviously, stuff like Mail.
Yeah.
BBC News...
You too.
Oh, camera. The new thing, just talking about cool apps, the
panorama.
Panorama thing.
You love
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So
can't you do it because your
can't
phone's cool?
That. Yeah.
Stunningly good. Well done, Apple.
I like using Path because I've always hated Instagram. Yeah, I've always had an allergy. Someone
Link
mentioned it.
Oh,
no, I hate that. That's
right,
because it's new and it's horrible, and no. So I use Path, which
right.
I use for my filters, which no one else uses. I used to have about, I don't know, 25, 30-odd people, and they've gradually all dropped off using it, so I think they're just sort of shouting into the ether.
I think it does repost to Twitter, I noticed.
What I use it for mainly was reposting to Twitter and Facebook at the same time. So
right.
I can fire up Path and just say, post to Twitter, Facebook, and check me in on Foursquare if I'm somewhere.
That's
and post
good.
A photo, it'll check me in. But Facebook have recently changed it, so you can't add what Path called thoughts would be
right.
like... a tweet or a status update. Facebook had changed something weird, so when you post a thought, it just links off to the Path website
right.
and doesn't actually post it as a status anymore.
That's the other thing that I don't like about it with Twitter, which Instagram does. It's not. It's down to Twitter. Is that Twitter will show an Instagram picture in line, while with Path, you have to link off.
I'm sure I've seen Path do it a couple of times, but it's not
That's
reliable.
Right.
Possibly. I don't know. Mm. Yeah, I do like that about it showing in line.
I use voice memos a lot.
Do you?
Yes. Not for voice. God knows what this is going to include.
This is just him trying to... Oh, right.
Put my guitar-y ideas down.
Oh, right. That's quite interesting. I always find it fascinating how different people use iPhones.
Tons and tons of 30-second clips. I go, I quite like that.
Yeah.
And I'll just use it. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Right. I find that absolute fact. I mean, this is a massive tangent again, but it is quite interesting to see how different people use their iPhones. It's fascinating. Anyway,
I really like Words with Friends as well, but nobody will play me.
Aww.
That's because it's ancient.
No,
it's really designed for.
What's wrong with that?
Words with
doesn't
friend.
Mean bad.
Don't, the Words with Friends.
Multiplayer game apps come and go, though.
It's Scrabble.
True.
I'll play
Words with Friends.
Oh, whenever I think of Words with Friends. You playing that. For some reason, I have this image of you sitting at home with a blanket over your knees, with your reading glasses on, with a cup of cocoa, playing that.
Playing Scrabble.
It's an old person's game, is my point.
Scrabble is one of the best games ever invented.
It's not. I don't like it, because it requires
spelling.
Because
you can't spell.
That's why I don't like it.
I am a total grammar nerd, so I love it.
Go grammar.
Although, apparently, you were being criticised by one user for saying... Oh, no, now I've gone paranoid.
You're going to get it wrong, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Asterisks instead of asterisk.
I don't know how to... I would pronounce asterisk, but that may
asterisk,
well be wrong.
Technically.
Because apparently you were referring to some cartoon character from France.
Asterisk. It's not an X. It's not an X.
There's
it's
no X in it. You say it with an X.
Asterisk.
Asterisk, yes. That's a little star.
Yeah.
Asterisk...
Apparently in the show
is a French character. Yeah.
Apparently in the show, we were talking about little stars. I don't even remember doing this, but and you were saying French cartoon characters.
That's just my poor pronunciation. I wouldn't spell it wrong.
No,
that's like espresso, expresso.
Oh, I have.
Well,
that problem.
There's never been an X in espresso.
No, there is not.
So there,
I say an X in it all the time. But then I speak Dorset. So that's a different language entirely. Right, anyway, the app that we're supposed to be talking about this week is one called PhotoSync. Have either of you come across PhotoSync?
No.
Nope.
So this is how then do you get photographs off of your iPhone onto your desktop?
iPhoto, email, or Dropbox.
Yeah, iPhoto.
Dropbox is a good one.
Dropbox automatically PhotoSyncs, and it gave me lots of free space.
Yes. I hadn't thought of that one. This year, week's...
I made your app redundant.
To be honest, I've been using it for a long time. No, it's better, I think.
What's wrong with iPhoto?
iPhoto is a huge faff. You have to open up
iPhoto. Oh, God, you need a cable. Oh, you've got to plug it in physically.
You have to physically plug it in. You have to launch iPhoto.
You know, 10 megabyte a piece. Photographs, a cable's a good idea, isn't
it? No. My problem with iPhoto, I use iPhoto all the time, right? I have all my family photographs off, but iPhoto is a dog. It optimises really, really badly. And actually, you don't need a cable for iPhoto because it uses photo
It does do
streaming,
cloud sync streaming now,
doesn't it?
Yes,
the photo
it does,
stream thing.
Yes.
But a little app that I love is called PhotoSync. right? And I've lost it. It was here a minute ago.
I might actually even use this one.
It is quite a useful little app. It's photosync-app.com, right? And essentially, it's a tiny little app. You have one version running on your computer, just as a little thingy in the, you know, in the menu bar. And then you launch up this app, you select the files you want to send across, and Bob's your uncle, you can send it straight across. If you don't want to be running the little icon in the corner of your Mac...
Oh, it costs $1.99.
Oh, for...
£2, Paul. £2.
You know that's dollars, $1.99.
Yeah, see, that's a bargain. If, on the other hand, you don't want to run the local app, or if you're using someone else's computer, it even gives you a web URL you can type in, your local IP address of that iPhone, and then you can just download stuff through a beautiful web interface, job done. Does video, does photographs. It's a brilliant and quick way to get stuff across onto your computer.
All right.
I rest my case. Yeah, you going to get it?
Sounds pretty good, actually.
No. Oh, I've convinced...
I'm stuck in my ways.
I've convinced Marcus. Sorry, you don't buy apps. I forgot that.
I do buy apps.
Right.
I just don't buy new things that often.
Right. I find this a really useful little app. There's loads of other ways of doing it. Another one that's really good, link in the show notes, is Pastebot. Have you ever used Pastebot?
I've heard of it.
Pastebot's really good. So what Pastebot? Now, that one you do need a local computer desktop app running in your menu bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Pastebot, I think it's from the same people. Yeah, it's from Tapbot people. And essentially what that is it's like a syncing clipboard. So you can go to a... you know, copy something on your Mac and it then goes across onto your iPhone and vice versa. So that's really good. For some reason, their website is offline at the moment, which is a bit rubbish. Cloudflare is rubbish as a service.
Don't use it.
Link in the show notes. yeah, this is what they're using at the moment, right? And saying that their site's offline. Cloudflare is something that I use on Boagron. I'm going to stop using it when I update it. And it supposedly increases performance because there's a word for it, when it spreads your assets all around the world. So you're downloading it from what's it called?
Content delivery network.
Yes, it's a content delivery network, essentially. It's a bit more than that as well. But so often I go to my own website and it says, there is no cache version of this website available, right? It doesn't just send you through to the live version. It tells you there's no cache version and makes you click on a button, retry for the live version of the site.
Is that not something in settings that you can have it automatically redirect?
Maybe. But it's not in the default settings.
It seems like something that's very silly if it wasn't in settings.
Shut up, Dan. You're pointing out it's probably my problem and not theirs. So anyway, so Pastebot is another way of doing it as well. So and that can obviously do anything that you can put in your clipboard. So it doesn't have to just be photographs. But I love Photosync. It's a great little tool. And I always seem to be copying stuff backwards and forwards from my iPhone for some reason. I don't know why.
Mm. Email does it really well, actually.
Well, the problem with doing it via email...
Tweeting stuff.
Yeah.
No, okay, right. Let's tweeting, no good, because you don't want to share it with the world. So that's that written off. Email will often resize images
Send it actual size.
You can send it actual size, but it does have this desire to resize it. And if you're not careful, you can end up resizing it. Also,
dialogue also says what size do you want to send this?
Come on, Paul. Also, that is really poor.
Shut up. Also, you have to wait for the email to arrive. It's not as instantaneous.
Send it to yourself.
If you send it to yourself, you still got to wait for it.
It was the same as syncing it with something else.
I love the fact that this entire conversation springs out of the fact that the iPhone was the first phone that you basically couldn't send photos over Bluetooth. We'd never have this problem if you could have sent photos.
That is true.
And you still can't because there's no file system access. Even with sort of... Yeah,
the lack of file system access is... I can understand it, but it is a pain in the arse, isn't it?
Mm. It's nice to be jailbroken.
That's a good thing. And that's one of the reasons why an iPad doesn't appeal to me.
Right, lack of file system.
Care on a phone. It's a phone.
Mm.
Yeah. It does email. Oh, I need to read my email, and that's it, really. But if I had an iPad, I'd like to be able to use it properly.
Yeah.
Like I use a computer.
Yeah.
This is why I never really fell in love with mine, This is why I don't have one. I love my tiny little 11-inch Air. That comes everywhere with me, and it's got a full keyboard, full physical keyboard. And I know I'm weird, but...
No, I agree with you.
We should be discussing this on Wednesday, really. Because by then, we'll know about the iPad Mini.
Let's do that. Let's talk about that on Wednesday. Because this is one of my favourite conversations.
Absolutely. Although it's nothing to do with web design.
We'll move on.
Doesn't matter.
All right. I think that about wraps us up for this week's show. This has been a really waffly show. Well done, people.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
All my fault.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan, for taking us a tangent upon a tangent. But to be honest, as I had so little to say about some of these picks, I think that was a good idea.
Yeah, we've done really well. Nearly an hour.
90% pointless waffle. Mr. Drivel Man will be very happy.
He's long gone. Utter drivel.
Utter. Oh, that does remind me of something I want to ask. Guys, I really appreciate you listening to this show, and we do love the fact that you are so great at telling other people about it and promoting it. One thing I would really appreciate, mine, is if you would go and give us a review on iTunes. It does make a huge difference to our listing. I know it's like a pain in the arse. I feel like one of those people that are popping up a dialogue box when I'm trying to use an app on the iPhone
saying, rate us.
Yeah. But I would really appreciate a little review if you could spare a couple of minutes. And yeah, we've now decided to be out in the open and not to go stealth anymore, to get one over on the big web show or whatever it is. Do you know, Jeffrey Zelman hates me.
No, he doesn't.
No, he does. Seriously.
Rubbish.
Seriously. I have proof now.
Right, here we go. Yeah.
That's the other thing I learned at Future Web Apps. I knew there was a third thing. And that's that Jeffrey Zelman hates me. Jeffrey Zelman was speaking at Future Web Apps, right?
Yeah.
I came up on the Tuesday, right? He arrived over the weekend. He left. We actually passed trains of him going in the opposite direction. He left the capital city to avoid me.
Then
I said, Jeffrey, are you going to the after party? Yeah, Paul, I'll be at the after party. I'll see you there. Never turned up. All evening, I just stood by the door waiting for Jeffrey Zeldman to be a little fanboy, and he never turned up.
Now you know how it feels to be one of the little people.
I sound so arrogant. Oh, right, yes, Marcus, let's do a joke.
Let's just do a quick joke here. Now, as you all know, I've been promoting the Boag World app.
Which, by the way, hasn't been updated for iPhone 5, doesn't work on iOS 6, so don't bother downloading it.
It does work on iOS 6. I'm looking at it on iOS 6.
I bet the things don't update, the news feeds. We've got a bug that needs fixing.
Okay, don't download the Boag World app, but it has got all lots of old jokes on it, which is what I'm using this for. And this one, I think, is my favourite of all time. Randomly appeared.
No pressure, then.
Which probably means you've heard it four times before instead of just the once.
Right.
But anyway, here we go. It's such small text. I need my glasses.
Oh, so funny.
In a little town, there was an extremely proud father for having six kids. So proud that he called his wife Mother of Six. But his wife hated this. So one day they were at a wedding and he yelled at her loudly so that everybody could hear them. Ready to go, Mother of Six. And she yelled back, of course I am, Father of Four.
No, that's quite good. I don't remember ever hearing that one.
No?
Okay, well, you must have told it if it's on the app.
Yep.
The app never lies.
Well, yeah.
Do you think we ought to add a new section to the podcast where I suppose they're in the show notes, aren't they? The jokes in the show notes.
I guess they are.
Perhaps I need to, you know, I provide a jump link to each of the apps. Perhaps I need to allow people to jump specifically to the joke. So that they can skip the rest of the waffle and just have the joke.
No. Not doing that.
It has to be a reward for enduring the rest of the show.
Exactly.
Okay, that's great. Dan, thanks very much for coming on the show with us. And thank you guys for listening. We will return again next week with more utter drivel.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Designing, developing, running websites on a daily basis. development.